Mr. Strongrock, I trust I can prevail upon you to accompany us. Inspector, do you have a cab downstairs? You can give us a lift there before going on to get your search warrant. Singh looked at Bradamant, Irene and Kai with less than total enthusiasm, but controlled his expression. I have one, sir, but I believe that we may require a second one if we are not to subject the ladies to unduly close quarters. I'd rather not delay, Irene broke in. A growing sense of urgency was pricking at her. Maybe the bank deposit box was the more likely possibility, but what if they were wrong? Inspector, do you think you are followed here? Singh frowned. I can't deny that it is possible, madam. Not that anyone would find it strange. A great many people from the yard come to visit Mr. Vale here, and very frequently at that. Vale stepped across to the window and stood to one side of it, peering down at the street below. I can't say whether they followed you, Inspector, or whether they're watching me, he reported. But Harry Jimmy of the Whitechapel Roaring Boys is watching my front door. That'll be Lord Silver, I believe, Singh said, slipping his papers back into his case. The Iron Brotherhood wouldn't have anything to do with werewolves. Vale considered for a moment. Well, with London traffic the way it is at this hour of the morning, even if they're going to the museum, we should still make it there before they do. He snatched a coat from the overloaded hat stand, flung it on, and caught up his hat and sword cane. Let us be off. Kai had also sprung to his feet in wild enthusiasm and was busy finding his own hat and coat, which allowed Irene to tug Bradamant into the passage for a word in private. What is it? Bradamant asked quietly. What are the identifying marks for the book? She saw Bradamant begin to say something and held up a hand to stop her. Look, you said that you've already been fooled once with a fake. If it was your superior who sent you back, if you're actually here with permission, she saw Bradamant's eyes narrow in anger at that, then he wouldn't have sent you back again without giving you some sort of way to identify the genuine article. Are you really going to risk losing the book because you're not prepared to share that with me? A book which may be that important to this world. Bradamant's glare was pure poison. Don't rush me, she said. I'm thinking. Think fast, Irene said. Vale will be coming to find us in a moment. Tale 87, Bradamant said. The story of the stone from the Tower of Babel. If it's there, then it's genuine. Thank you, Irene said. She picked up her hat and veil and skewered them in place with a hatpin. Bradamant seemed about to say something, but with a visible struggle managed to contain herself. She adjusted her own hat, then swept out, calling sweetly, We're coming! A few seconds later, they were all jumbled together in a hansom cab and heading to the Natural History Museum. From what Irene could remember of London's geography, it was at least half an hour away, more if the traffic was bad. Singh had muttered the instructions to the driver, rather than shouting them loud enough to be heard across the street, and was now brooding in the corner of the cab. Kai, Vale and Singh were all sandwiched onto one seat, while Irene and Bradamant shared the seat opposite and tried not to look too comfortable. "Do you know who we need to speak to when we get there, Inspector?" Vale asked Singh. Singh nodded. I have the name from last time, Professor Bettany, and even if you can't find her, then you can find her office in the Department of Cryptidology, downstairs. With any luck, you can be in and out of there before anyone who might be following you catches up. We can then establish if the book's here or not, and I'll be getting that search warrant in the meantime. He gave Bradamant one of his flat looks. And then this young lady can return the other books that she made off with. Bradamant flushed, lowered her eyes, played with the strap of her handbag. She looked in every way like an innocent young woman who had been led into crime by bad company and wanted nothing more than to make amends. Irene had to admire the performance, especially given Bradamant's probable feelings of rage toward her. Do you often get sent on missions like this for this library of yours, Miss Winter? Vale asked Irene. He tried to make it sound like casual conversation, but she could feel the deeper curiosity beneath his words. This one is a bit more, dramatic than most of them, Irene said, a little relieved that Vale was asking her rather than Bradamant. And that was perfectly true. She'd had dozens of missions where she'd simply wandered in, quietly bought a copy of the book in question, and left without anyone so much as noticing her. And at least 10 assignments where there had been some minor illegality involved. But none had featured chases through the streets, dangerously flamboyant personalities, or cyborg alligators. There was a time before this when I was in France. Well, a France. There were a lot of Frances. I was trying to secure a copy of a book about alchemy by someone called Michael Meyer, a few hundred years old. It was called, she frowned, something about 9 triads, and it contained intellectual songs about the resurrection of the phoenix, or something along those lines. I ended up getting involved with a group of Templars and having to leave in something of a hurry, about 5 minutes before they'd broken the door down, to be precise. But no need to tell Vale that bit. And then there was the cat burglar affair, Bradamant said sweetly. Irene felt her hands tighten in her gloves. She forced herself to stay calm. Yes, she agreed. There was that. Kai leaned forward. What was this cat burglar affair? He asked. Bradamant smiled in a sympathetic, understanding, non-judgmental sort of way. Oh, it was when I was mentoring Irene, when she was first working in the field. We were trying to locate a book which had been stolen by a notorious thief. Everyone knew who she was. The best police officers in the city were watching her every move, and still they couldn't catch her. And when Irene and I were trying to investigate her, well, she smiled again, tolerantly. The lady in question was very charming, and it wasn't as if I was in any significant danger while Irene was so, shall we say, preoccupied with her. And I managed to find the book, so all's well that ends well. Irene looked down at her knees and bit her tongue. It hadn't been like that at all, it hadn't. But that was all the story that anyone would know now. Bradamant had cheerfully spread it all over the library in murmured detail, and anything that Irene had said then, or could say now, would simply make her sound as if she was making excuses. The alternate had been one with a very specific set of social standards. Theft was a comparatively petty transgression there, even if it was illegal. Immoral behaviour was the sort of thing which could entirely destroy a woman's reputation. Bradamant had set the whole thing up, arranging an identity for Irene as a freelance thief herself, suggesting that perhaps the woman could be persuaded to hand the book over, and even fixing up an assignation. And then she'd simply burgled the woman's house, while Irene had been sincerely trying to talk her round. And Irene had been left floundering and making excuses, and trying to explain what had happened to the other woman's house, and her possessions, and her reputation. She had come out of it with a bitter, lasting fury against Bradamant, and a resolution that she would never do the same thing to someone who actually trusted her. Never. Never. And if she tried to object now, it'd be just the same as before. She'd look as if she was trying to make excuses for something which must have been her fault if she was making excuses for it. She'd look guilty. She'd look petty. She'd look like a child. Yes, she agreed, with a smile as pleasant as Bradamant's own. All's well that ends well. Kai glanced from Irene to Bradamant, then back again. Of course, this is the first time I've worked with Miss Winters, he said, a fraction too quickly. I was rather hoping we might be sent to fetch some poetry at some point. I have a high regard for poetry. My father and uncles always felt that it was very important for anyone who had any claim to culture. Sing leaned forward, looking genuinely interested. The epic poem, or shorter forms? The conversation shifted, much to Irene's relief, into a debate on poetry that lasted for most of the journey. She herself was mostly silent, being more used to acquiring it than reading it. Bradamant put in a word or two in favour of the Elizabethan styles, and fortunately there had been an Elizabeth on this alternate. Vale had a fondness for Persian poets, though his pronunciation of their names was bad enough that Singh twitched. Singh himself refused to consider anything shorter than an epic poem as worthy of serious study. And Kai, not too surprisingly, favored classical Chinese modes with a passing nod to constructions like the Sestina and Villanelle. It took a moment for her to realize that she was actually enjoying herself. Even if she wasn't contributing much to the conversation, she was taking part in it. She was speaking her mind. She was having an honest exchange of opinion. She was among equals, the back of her mind supplied, with the unwillingness that came with the recognition of an unwanted truth. You are discussing a common interest without worrying about betrayal or about losing them, and you are enjoying it. How long is it since you did that? She looked around at her party's various interested expressions and felt as if she had known them for years. It was ridiculous, and yet it wasn't unwelcome. The traffic outside had descended from merely bad to abominable, and their cab's progress had slowed to a walking pace, with occasional jolts at the traffic lights. "There isn't any risk of us being overtaken, is there?" Irene asked nervously.
"Very unlikely, madam," Singh answered. "For that, they would need to know where we're going, and there are far too many places where we could be going for them to be certain."
"There is one thing that I've been wondering about," Kai said. "While I know that you have difference engines and calculating mechanisms, I have yet to see any sort of long-distance communication device. Now I..." He became conscious of Irene's glare. "That is, hasn't that sort of thing been investigated?" Vale sighed.
"Another of your alternate world advanced pieces of technology, Mr. Strongrock. There has indeed been some research into the subject, but it proved simply too prone to demonic possession. While there have been a few successes with various forms of theologically based shieldings, on the whole, the area cannot be said to reward investigation. Certainly, it would be unsafe to put such things in the hands of the masses."
"But how do Zeppelin pilots communicate with the ground?" Irene asked. Vale sniffed, and Singh looked disgusted.
"Fey magic," Vale said. "Another reason why Liechtenstein has so heavy an influence on the Zeppelin industry. I believe they also make some machinery for submersibles, but of course the large quantity of iron reduces the magic's efficiency."
Irene nodded and wished that some of this had been in the information pack which Dominic Aubrey had provided. He'd completely neglected the subject. There had been plenty of material on the current non-Fae situation, but hardly any on the Fae themselves, their political implications, and their ongoing plans for world domination. Since Fae always had plans for world domination, it was more dramatic that way, after all. Possibly he'd thought that she would be able to avoid Fae interference, though, given Wyndham's involvement with Silver, that would scarcely have been possible. Could someone have managed to remove part of the information pack? And if so, how? And when? She also wished that she was sitting on Kai's side of the cab so that she could kick his ankle without it being obvious. Discussions along the lines of, "So why haven't you introduced this bit of technology in your alternate world?" rarely went well. Often there were perfectly good reasons why it hadn't been introduced, and you opened a whole can of worms by just asking. And on the few occasions when it simply hadn't been invented, and you had indeed introduced the alternate to a whole new concept, you could end up with problems like cold fusion. Not that she'd been involved in that one, but stories had got around. The cab jolted to a stop, and the driver leaned down to the opening.
"I'm sorry, sir, but I'm afraid as how traffic's very bad today, it'll be another 10 minutes before I could reach the steps of the museum. Though you can see its wall there. If it won't be inconveniencing you, sir, yourself and your friends might be finding it easier to walk from here."
"Certainly," Vale exclaimed, flinging the cab door open. He glanced up to the driver.
"Wait here. We shouldn't be long. Here."
He tossed a coin up to the driver. There was a keen energy driving his movements as they neared possible action.
"For your time."
Kai assisted Irene out of the cab, giving a little extra squeeze to her wrist as he helped her down the step.
Almost there, he murmured.
Bradamant coughed meaningfully. With an apologetic look, Kai let go of Irene and turned to help Bradamant down as well. The streets were full of traffic, moving slowly with a lot of shouting, and the air was full of smog. Irene folded her veil up across her face and stepped over to the museum wall to let people hurry past. The others joined her, waiting for Singh, who was talking to the driver. The wall was stained a deep, filthy brown from decades of ingrained smoke and smog. The surrounding buildings were old brick and marble, similarly smog-stained. Many of the people bustling by were carrying books or briefcases. From what she remembered of the geography of some Londons, there was a university near here, sited conveniently near the museum. A passing zeppelin high above caught the corner of her eye, and she glanced upwards. Several small zeppelins were moored to the roof of the museum, with pennants hanging from them emblazoned with the museum's name. As she looked further down the street, she could see more of them moored to the roof of other large buildings.
Ah, Vale said, following her line of sight. Splendid contraptions, aren't they? And so much faster than a cab, but sadly not as controllable. One of those little skimmers can make it across the channel and back without needing to refuel.
Across the channel? Irene asked. Does the museum use them for such trips then?
Vale nodded.
They can transfer important small items and particular rarities. I understand that most large museums keep a few of these, and of course much less risk of theft.
His narrow gaze shifted to Bradamant for a moment and brooded on her oblivious back. It seemed that he hadn't forgiven, or forgotten, any little details about cat burglars.
If you are from an alternate world yourself, Vale said, turning back to her, what is it like?
Irene noticed that Kai had edged close enough to listen. The problem was that she didn't have a good answer.
It was... well, it was just another world. The technology was a little more controlled than it is here. There weren't so many zeppelins, and there weren't any vampires or werewolves. My parents used to take me to the library as often as they could, but I spent a lot of time in boarding school. It was in Switzerland, and very good for languages.
She wasn't going to mention some of the other things that they'd taught. The school had prided itself on sending out pupils who were ready for anything, and some parts of that world had been very dangerous.
I did visit other alternates with my parents too, Irene added. Sometimes when they were on a mission, and they didn't think that it was too dangerous. Sometimes I was even helpful. She found herself smiling. And there were years in the library, though there weren't many other children there. But I had to grow up mainly outside the library.
Why is that? Vale asked. Surely it would have been better for you to stay there and be tutored in safety rather than taken into danger.
Irene knew she was on dangerous ground here. There were some things that she shouldn't tell, for her own safety.
Time passes differently in the library, she eventually said. My parents wanted me to grow up naturally. Well, moderately naturally. And if I was to be a useful librarian, I had to know how to function outside the place.
Is that why they usually recruit from outside the library, rather than the children of librarians? Kai asked.
Irene nodded.
That and, well, to be honest, I don't think librarians tend to have children very often. And even then, there's no guarantee they'd want to become librarians in turn. I think I'm the only one in a generation or so.
She caught a movement out of the corner of her eye. Bradamant was turning away, but not quite fast enough to hide the expression on her face. There had been a corrosive jealousy in her eyes. Irene didn't think that she'd seen it in the other woman before. Or had she? She'd tried to forget so many other things about Bradamant, and failed so badly. Singh walked up to Vale, having finished his low-voiced conversation with the cab driver.
I'll send the cab back here for you, sir. Once he's dropped me off at the Old Bailey, it shouldn't take you long to check whether the book's here.
Irene controlled her impatience. It was a great relief to think that in half an hour she could even be heading back to the library, book in hand, Kai in tow, Bradamant in... Well, she didn't consciously want to think about Bradamant in disgrace. After all, everyone had a failure now and again. Things like glamorous cat burglars. Whatever. Maybe an hour. She didn't want to be too optimistic. Inside the museum, the building widened out into a glorious cathedral-like hall, with a high curving ceiling inset with windows and a mosaic inlaid floor. A Diplodocus skeleton leered down bonily from high above the heads of the onlookers, and some harassed-sounding mother implored her little darling not to try and climb on its foot. A white marble statue at the head of the room's main stairway overlooked the whole thing with an air of dignified approval. It was about the only piece of non-smog-stained marble that Irene had seen in this alternate London. She supposed that it was interesting enough, but it was sadly lacking in books. Vale clearly knew his way around and led them up one of the staircases, through several minor rooms of exhibits, then past a wide range of stuffed animals, stuffed plants, and possibly stuffed mineral deposits. She didn't have time to check. Next, they hurried down another staircase and into an even more cluttered and confused set of corridors, which was clearly where work actually got done. Crates were stacked against the walls, many with notes attached saying, "Open this today." The only things that weren't dirty or dusty were the office door's brass nameplates. These gleamed with a rather desperate shine, as if trying to compensate for their surroundings. "Here we are," Vale said, pausing before one, which apparently belonged to Professor Amelia Bettany, MSc, PhD, and Doctor of Divinity. "This was the person to whom the crate was addressed. Let's see if we can eliminate this possibility." He shoved the door open without bothering to knock. Inside, the low-ceilinged office was larger than expected. The small desk in the corner was piled high with unopened envelopes and packages, and the large table in the middle of the room was strewn with bones, glue pots, and measuring devices. The air smelt of dust and drying solvent. Then a young man entered from a side door, a steaming mug of tea in his hand. He stood there, blinking at the four of them.
"Mr. Ramsbottom, I presume," Vale said, stepping forward briskly. "Professor Bettany's secretary."
The young man nodded and peered at Vale, and his eyes widened in recognition.
"Ah, I'm so terribly sorry, but the professor is away on the Egypt expedition, if you are wanting to consult her over a case."
"Fortunately, I believe that you will suffice, Mr. Ramsbottom," Vale said. "We are here to look into the matter of a parcel that may have gone astray."
Ramsbottom glanced guiltily at the stacks of incoming mail on the corner desk.
"We are looking for a crate from Lord Wyndham," Vale said.
To his side, Irene could see Kai tense with excitement, watching Ramsbottom with a glare of anticipation that was probably unnerving the nervous-looking fellow.
"It would have been delivered about 5 days ago."
Was it really that short a time since Wyndham's death, since Irene and Kai had arrived here? It felt so much longer, Irene thought.
"Ah,"
Ramsbottom said, sidling towards the desk. He abandoned his mug and selected a ledger.
"Actually, I think I do remember that one."
"You do?"
Vale asked. Ramsbottom nodded.
"There were particular instructions enclosed with it. Please, gentlemen, ladies, Professor Bettany will no doubt answer everything with full dispatch as soon as she returns."
He glanced guiltily at the pile of post again.
"But she does have a very specific dislike of anyone else reading her post. And when she left, she told me that unless a letter or package specifically said that it should be opened..."
"The crate man," Vale snapped, striding forward. "What happened to it?"
Ramsbottom twitched at his collar.
"The accompanying note stipulated that if Professor Bettany did not return to open it within 3 days of its receipt, then her assigned subordinate, which is myself, was to open it and take all necessary actions with the contents."
Irene swallowed. To one side, she could see Bradamant going white. To her other side, she could hear the hoarseness in Kai's breathing. This must have been some sort of last gambit by Wyndham, in case he wasn't able to collect his prized book. In expectation of his murder? as just one more step in whatever relationship he'd had with Silver? As a deliberate ploy against Silver getting his hands on the book? Or to hide it from someone else? The package contained an Archaeopteryx skeleton, Ramsbottom went on, more nervous by the second. And another parcel, to be forwarded elsewhere. He stuttered to an anxious stop.
And where would that be? Vale prompted.
Ramsbottom hesitated.
This is a matter of confidentiality, Mr. Vale, and while I do know your connections with the police, I...
He trailed off, apparently unable to utter the words, I'm not going to tell you.
Mr. Ramsbottom, Vale stepped forward. Naturally, I will not press the matter. But I would be grateful if you could reassure me that there will be no difficulty in tracing the package, should such a thing prove necessary.
Of course,
Ramsbottom exclaimed, looking deeply relieved. He tapped a small blue ledger.
I have full details here of where the package went.
Then the door in the opposite side of the room slammed open, and Silver strode through, followed by his bland-looking manservant and half a dozen hairy men in cheap suits and bad hats.
At last, he declaimed, pointing dramatically. I have you now, my dear enemy.
He was pointing at Bradamant. Chapter 17.
What?
Bradamant said, then quickly converted it to,
But, how did you find us so quickly?
Silver laughed merrily. His hair, loose over his shoulders, tossed in a wind which somehow blew around him and ruffled his clothing, but failed to stir a single hair on the loose bearded thugs who crowded in behind him and leered at the room in general. Their clothing was as dirty and unkempt as Silver's was elegant and stylish, and they all had eyebrows which met in the middle.
Ha!
Silver preened. He pointed his cane at the unfortunate Ramsbottom, who was trying to retreat into a corner, any corner.
You, hand over the book at once, and your rewards will be beyond your imagination.
Careful, Silver, Vale said. His grip on his sword stick was no longer quite as casual as it had been a few seconds ago. You wouldn't want to have any witnesses to illegal actions on your part, would you?
Illegal actions?
Silver turned to his manservant.
Johnson, have I committed any illegal actions?
Johnson checked his watch.
Not within the last 3 minutes, sir.
Silver turned back to Vale.
There you have it. Rest assured that I am not at the moment committing any illegal actions. I am merely promising this hireling here that if he hands over the book I am looking for, then he will receive rewards beyond his wildest imaginings.
Well, if there's nothing illegal in it,
Ramsbottom said vaguely. His eyes followed Silver dreamily, watching his every gesture, his every breath. Irene remembered the glamour that Silver had tried to lay on her back in Wyndham's study.
My dear sir, Bradamant said,
with a nerve that Irene wasn't quite sure she'd have managed to muster.
You still have not explained how you managed to track us here.
She stepped to her left, forcing Silver to take his attention off Ramsbottom if he wanted to keep his eyes on her. Silver waved a hand vaguely.
The simplest of matters. I subcontracted. Knowing that I could not track an agent of the library. Ah, you fooled me once, but not again. I approached the elder Miss Olga Retrograde.
Irene and Bradamant exchanged quick, shocked looks. It was one thing to think that Silver might be aware of the library. Many fey and dragons were, after all, just as the library was aware of them. But have him say it so boldly, and in front of witnesses, was rather worrying, in that it suggested there would shortly be no witnesses. And how had Silver known in any case? What had he seen? How much did he know about the library? Vale, meanwhile, looked outraged.
You dealt with her. Merely a matter of convenience,
Silver said airily.
Normally, she is far too sordid for me to do more than invite her to my parties. I don't suppose you would care to comment on that, would you, my dear private detective? From a, shall we say, family perspective.
Vale looked even more furious, if that were possible.
I have nothing that I would wish to say about her,
he spat.
Then allow me to clarify,
Silver said with great satisfaction.
Her scrying attempts proved useless until you left your lodgings this morning. She caught the directions given to the cab driver. From then, it was simply a matter of reaching this museum first, and having my minions here locate your destination.
He smiled at the hirsute thugs.
We know, Mr. Vale Smell,
one of them growled, his tongue coming unsettlingly far out of his mouth as he panted.
We all know, Mr. Vale Smell. There's a lot of us want to have a nice quiet little chat with Mr. Vale down some dark alley sometime.
There, there, Silver said. I'm sure you'll get your chance someday very soon now. If Mr. Vale doesn't advise his library associate to comply with my requests...
He smiled at Bradamant, dazzlingly. Irene felt a little of the overspill of it, the burning surge of slavish desire and passionate adoration, and felt the brand across her back burn like raw ice in reaction. She also felt a quick burst of relief that apparently Silver hadn't recognized her as a library agent. She was still incognito for the moment. Ramsbottom's hands fell to his sides, and he gave up all attempts to be helpful to stare at Silver in mute fascination. Vale didn't seem to be affected. Irene was tempted to look behind her to see what Kai was doing, but as a dragon, he should surely be immune to anything that Silver could throw at him. At least, she hoped so. Silver thought that the book was still here. There had to be some way that they could use that. At least Bradamant was playing along and keeping Silver occupied.
But how did you know I was from the library?
Bradamant asked, edging still further to the left. One of the thugs twitched forward as if to make a grab for her, but Silver shook his head.
No. My adversary deserves to know at least that much. How well you fooled me, my dear. I was quite distracted by your mousy little minion over there, in her drab dress.
He gestured at Irene.
And by your cunning thefts. How could I have realized that you were the mastermind behind it all? It was only after I put it all together that I saw you in your true light.
Irene was torn between relief that he wasn't focusing on her and a certain amount of irritation that she was apparently a mousy little minion, unworthy of his attention. Was she so utterly unnoticeable? Why wasn't he pointing a finger at Irene and declaiming about her being an impressive mastermind? In fact, why was Silver claiming that there was a mastermind at all? Part of her was aware that this was an incredibly stupid attitude to take, a reaction to his fey charm or something. The same thing that was making her want to pout and preen at him, maybe bare a shoulder or breathe deeply or somehow get him to notice her. To have him touch her with those beautiful long hands, his body pressing.
Right.
A thought at the back of her head was trying to get her attention. This is the problem with interacting with the Fae. An instructor's voice from back at the library, talking to half a dozen trainees while they made notes, or surreptitiously tried to plot out best-selling novels, droning away while rain spattered against the window that looked out onto a deserted grey stone square full of empty market stalls. They see everything in terms of their own personal drama. If you are not careful, they will drag you into it. This is in fact a problem and a risk with all chaos-infected alternates.
I see.
Bradamant did a good job of drooping in response to Silver's accusations.
Then you know everything.
Everything,
Silver declared.
I am not surprised that Aubrey should have called for reinforcements from the library with such a prize at stake. But now he will have to admit that he has failed. Our long rivalry is at an end.
Irene blinked in shock. No. No, that couldn't be right. If Silver had known Dominic Aubrey and had learnt that he was a library agent, then Dominic should have known about Silver being a threat. But Dominic hadn't said a single word about Silver being an enemy of his, or warned them about him, or even told them that Silver existed. And why was Bradamant nodding? What did she know?
Aubrey warned me about you, she said. But I believe he did not prepare me enough.
No, surely this was impossible. There was no conceivable reason for Dominic to warn Bradamant but not her or Kai. They could well have come into contact, as the only door to the library was in Aubrey's office. But there had been no sign that they had exchanged this sort of intelligence. Of course, Dominic might have his own patrons in the library who wanted Bradamant to find the book first. That was entirely plausible, and wasn't even an offence as such. But deliberately hiding the threat of Silver from her and Kai wasn't just a casual slip. It was a betrayal. If she'd got back and told her superiors, then Dominic might well have been removed from his post. Could Bradamant be lying? Her thoughts rattled in her head like computer keys, and the tension in the room escalated as Silver considered his next dramatic reply, as Vale and Kai shifted their positions behind her, and as the werewolves panted and waited to lunge. No, it didn't fit. Oh, all right, maybe Bradamant and Silver might be secret allies, staging an argument to convince her. But that was taking paranoia too far. So if Dominic knew about Silver and considered him significant enough to warn Bradamant, but didn't even bother mentioning him to Irene on the next day when he knew Irene was on a confirmed mission, then what did that imply? What had changed? She thought back to her brief contact with Dominic Aubrey. His use of the language was strangely old-fashioned. And then there was Dominic Aubrey's disappearance and skinning, which left his library tattoo intact, but no sign of his body at all. And how did Alberic operate in this alternate world? Alberic, who had lived for long enough to be a legend even among the librarians. But nobody knew how, and nobody even knew what he looked like. An idea was forming, an idea that she mentally flinched from, but one that answered a lot of questions. Stealing someone's skin and identity was covered in obscure folklore treatises, but it wasn't something that she ever expected to be real. She didn't want it to be real. Silver had advanced on Vale and was flourishing his cane menacingly.
Wyndham only wanted the book because of information I gave him. Then he thought he could bargain for it with me. Why, if the Iron Brotherhood hadn't disposed of him, I might have been forced to do so myself. But all is not lost, my dear.
So it was the Iron Brotherhood that had killed Wyndham. Assuming Silver was correct about it, that tied off one loose end. Good, Irene thought. At least that's one less unidentified group of assassins running about the place. Silver took a step forward, smiling brilliantly. Irene felt the air tingle with suppressed longing again.
Hand over the book, and I will be glad to agree to any terms that you might desire.
Over by the desk, Ramsbottom seemed poised to tell all. His hand wavered towards the small blue ledger. Kai was the one who moved. He sprang forward like a leopard and threw himself into a running dive across the desk, snatching the incriminating ledger out of Ramsbottom's hands. He tossed the ledger across the room to Irene, and it spun through the air in a flutter of pages.
Get that!
Silver shrieked. Irene caught it.
Back, ladies!
Vale snapped, as a swift twist of his hand revealed the sword inside his walking cane. The length of steel glittered in the burning glow of the lamps, and with a sudden crack, sparks cascaded down it, flaring up harshly between them.
Lord Silver, restrain your dogs!
Kai was pushing Ramsbottom back against the wall, getting between him and Silver's snarling minions.
Good for Kai, keeping the civilians out of it. Silver's minions were getting hairier by the second. Irene could see the spreading patches of iron grey and black matted fur on their hands, their lengthening nails, their bulging jaws with sprouting teeth. Come on! Bratamant grabbed Irene's shoulder, pulling her towards the door. Pure animal terror at the thought of being torn apart by half a dozen large wolves voted in favor of escape. Explanations could wait. She stumbled out into the corridor behind Bradamant. If they ran to the right, they'd be leading the chase back towards regular museum visitors. And that would not only be morally invidious, but would probably put them off museums for life. Irene tucked the ledger under one arm, picked up her skirts, and sprinted leftwards. She heard a muffled curse as Bradamant followed. Two junctions later, she paused at a spot where two corridors crossed. The place was a rabbit warren. The air to the right smelled fresher, which argued a way out to the ground floor, or at least a fire escape of some sort, but the passage to the left was better lit. The passage directly in front had nothing to recommend it.
"Keep going," Bradamant ordered, pausing to catch her breath. "The werewolves are right behind us."
But the floor was shuddering violently underneath them. It felt like a passing underground train, but more worryingly close to the surface. Then the floorboards directly ahead buckled upwards in slow motion, and something clawed and dark tore its way up and through. It dragged itself up into the passageway in a vast clashing of gears and clinking of metal. It was all oil-smeared steel except for the head, which was glass-panelled on either side to make two huge flat translucent eyes. It was clearly from the same root design as the metal creature that Kai and Vale had fought two nights ago, but smaller and faster.
"What's this?" Bradamant asked calmly, her words oddly distinct against the sound of splintering wood, grinding metal, and distant howling.
"I think it must be the Iron Brotherhood," Irene answered. "They probably followed Silver."
"Oh, this is simply getting ridiculous," Bradamant sniffed. "Which way next?"
The insectoid robot head swiveled to focus on Irene and Bradamant. It took a jointed pace down the corridor towards them, the claws attached to each segment of the body, dragging it along and leaving horrible gashes in the wood. Its top scraped the ceiling, bringing down cobwebs that had probably been centuries in the making, leaving a long swathe of scoured white plaster in its wake.
"Go right!"
Irene shouted to Bradamant, on no particular evidence, and ran in that direction. She was already calling vocabulary to her mind, words for gears, joints, pedals, steel, glass, struts and nuts and bolts. But there was always the chance that the construct would decide to chase Silver and the werewolves rather than them, and it seemed a shame to wreck it if so.
"It won't work, you know,"
Bradamant said, catching up and outpacing her.
"Do you seriously think that thing won't chase us?"
"It's worth a try," Irene gasped. She turned and looked back over her shoulder. The iron automaton came jolting forward in a screeching rattle of steps, then halted as it reached the junction. With a whir, the head turned to edge itself into the passage that Bradamant and Irene were running down. Its shoulders began to creak after it, manoeuvring so it could bear down the passage after them like an oncoming train. Irene and Bradamant looked at each other.
"I'll do the gears, if you do the joints," Irene said.
"Right," Bradamant said.
"Give it a moment, so that it can block the junction."
The robot managed to half-negotiate the turn. Its claws dug into the floor as inner springs rewound themselves. The huge lenses set into the head reflected the two women, mirror-like. If they were in fact windows, it was impossible to see who might be lurking behind them.
"Gears! Lock up!"
Irene shouted, pitching her voice to carry as far as possible.
"In head, in claws, in body, and in every part which can hear me. Gears, seize solid and stand firm."
The robot came to a standstill in a horrific mechanical screaming of blocked joints and gears. Even the distant howling of the werewolves was drowned out. Wires and cables tensed and broke. One claw rotated backwards, caught itself in the floor at an angle, and snapped.
and a fragment of steel went flying, pinging off the wall with a high-toned ring of metal, audible even over the noise of the machine destroying itself. Both women turned and ran down the corridor away from the thing, past closed offices and storerooms. The air was full of fresh dust, the smell of oil and burnt metal. A part of Irene's mind wondered if it'd make tomorrow's front pages. Probably. She didn't like making headlines. A good librarian was supposed to read headlines, not make them. There! Bradamant pointed unnecessarily to a stairway ahead of them. They plunged down it at a run, Bradamant swinging wide on the banister at the curve and almost hip-checking Irene. The door at its base opened onto the ground floor, revealing a room full of shells and corals. Several family groups turned to look at them, disapprovingly. Irene smiled her iciest smile, brushed some of the dust off her skirts, and took a firmer grip on the precious ledger. Behind her, Bradamant whispered something into the door lock. Irene couldn't quite make it out, but it had the cadence of the language. Hopefully, they had a couple of minutes before any werewolves, Fae, Iron Brotherhood, or other book hunters caught up with them. Irene spotted a small office on the other side of the room and caught Bradamant's eye. "Over there," she suggested, jerking her chin towards it. "Absolutely," Bradamant agreed. The two of them walked decorously across the room, skirting glass cases full of dried sea anemones, brittle polyps, and other brightly coloured objects that were probably happier when they'd been underwater. With a polite nod to an elderly man shuffling along behind a walking frame, Irene quietly tried the handle of the office door.
"Is it shut, dear?"
Bradamant inquired quietly.
"Oh, no,"
Irene said, keeping her voice down.
"In fact,
this door is open." The language rolled in her mouth, and the handle loosened under her hand, turning obediently to let the pair of them in.
"Not bad,"
Bradamant said, closing the door behind them. She looked around for a key, saw none, and muttered,
"Door lock, shut."
The lock clicked to again. Irene glanced round the room. It was clearly someone's important office. The desk and chairs were newer than the ones downstairs. The pieces of artwork and diagrams hanging on the walls had frames, and there wasn't any dust.
"We'd better not take too long," she said, walking over to the desk.
She sat down and flipped the ledger open.
"Someone might come in at any moment." "My dear Irene," Bradamant said, raising her hands to adjust her hat and her hair. "I may not be able to handle a set of werewolves and angry fae, but I can certainly handle one museum official, especially as he is overweight."
"Overweight?" Bradamant's smirk was obvious in her voice.
"I don't need to be a great detective like your Vale to look at the chair you're sitting in and see that it's usually sat in by an extremely fat man."
"Oh," Irene said, a little stung. Just because she had her own particular tastes in fiction didn't mean that she liked to be sneered at about them. She flipped through the pages, looking for entries dating 2 days ago.
"It arrived 5 days ago. Then 3 days after that, he would have sent it on."
"Ah," she said, finding the date.
"He's had a lot of packages go through. Professor Bettany must get a lot of mail."
She ran her finger down the page, looking for a mention of Wyndham's name.
"Got it. Package from Lord Wyndham, redispatched to... to Dominic Aubrey, British Library,"
Bradamant said in shock, reading over her shoulder.
"Of course,"
Irene slapped her hand against the desk.
"You said it yourself. Dominic was indiscreet in what he told Wyndham, and Wyndham was afraid of Silver striking at him or trying to steal the book."
"Well, technically a cold iron safe would keep a book safe from any thieves, not just fey ones. But Silver had known to look there for the book."
"If Wyndham wanted to hide the book from Silver, and if he knew more or less about Dominic, or at least if he knew for certain that Dominic was an enemy of Fae in general, and Silver in particular, Wyndham must have sent this package before his death, once he had the copy of the book made, the one that you stole."
She was aware that she was being incoherent, and she took a deep breath.
"He must have expected to get the book back from Dominic later."
Suddenly, her earlier fears about Dominic returned to her. But that means... A bright pain knifed into the side of her neck, as sharp and vivid as a wasp's sting. She would have exclaimed in shock, but the words were somehow fuzzy in her mouth, and her lips were numb. She was sagging back into the wide seat, thoughts clear, but body numb and loose, unable to form a single deliberate word. But that means, Bradamant said, wiping the end of her hatpin on the shoulder of Irene's coat before sliding it back into her own hat. That I don't need you anymore. Chapter 18.
What are you doing?
Irene slurred. She could barely form the words in English, let alone in the language. Making sure that this mission will be a success, Bradamant answered. I haven't broken my word. I promised you that if I found the book, I'd bring it to you before returning to the library. I will still do so once I've collected it from Dominic Aubrey's office. But that will be at my own convenience and in a way that I choose. In the meantime, I don't want you interfering any longer.
Stupid,
Irene mumbled. Stupid. She needed to tell Bradamant what she suspected about Alberich, but Bradamant's attack on her had just made that impossible.
Don't worry,
Bradamant said. She stroked a fragment of straight hair back under her hat. It's a curare derivative. You should be back on your feet in a half hour or so. It probably won't affect your breathing, or your heart. She smiled maliciously.
Or perhaps it will. It's not as if I've tested it that often, after all. Cheer up, Irene, dear. Soon you'll be free of all these annoying worries about the library and your actual job, and you can concentrate on your friends here instead. Perhaps you'll get another mission more commensurate with your talents. Gathering toilet paper, for example.
Irene glared up at her, struggling to form words.
You stupid idiot! Don't you realize that I was about to tell you something important?
This would have been the perfect time to develop telepathy, except that as far as she knew, it was purely fictional. Bradamant leaned across to retrieve the ledger.
I'm not blind, you know, she said. I have been aware of you watching me, your little sneers at the fact that I enjoy nice clothing. I've seen you turn up your little nose at my interest in completing the mission, and my willingness to lie to get the job done. Your general... dislike of me? Yes, dislike is a good word. We wouldn't call it quite scorn now, but you don't like me at all.
I suspect Dominic Aubrey isn't really Dominic Aubrey, Irene tried to convey with her eyes. I think Alberich replaced him days ago. I think that the kind man who Kai and I met was actually something old and vicious, wearing Dominic Aubrey's skin. And I think the only reason he hasn't found the book yet is that he didn't know about Dominic Aubrey's contacts. And, crucially, he hasn't bothered to check Dominic Aubrey's mail.
Get over it. Bradamant smiled down at Irene. Some of us aren't the spoiled offspring of lucky parents, who then spend the rest of their lives being treated like little angels. Some of us are grateful to be out of places worse than you can imagine.
A shadow flickered behind her eyes. We appreciate what we've been given, and we would do anything, anything at all, to do our job properly.
You can play around with your great detective as much as you like, Irene. Oh, don't think I never worked that one out. I know who you want to be, but I know who I am. I'll sacrifice whoever and whatever I must sacrifice to complete the mission. If you really understood, if you were really a proper librarian, then you'd do the same. Perhaps someday you will understand that.
You're about to walk right into his arms. Irene could feel tears burning at the corner of her eyes. You're going to walk in there, and you have no idea.
I'll lock the door behind me, Bradamant said helpfully. You shouldn't have any werewolves bursting in on you while you're helpless.
I hope they bite your bloody nose off, Irene thought vengefully.
Don't think of me as malicious, Bradamant said, then paused. Actually,
do think of me as malicious. Think of me as a malicious bitch who's going to take your mission, your credit, and possibly your apprentice if you haven't spoiled him too much. Think what you like, but...
She leaned forward and patted Irene's cheek gently. Irene couldn't even feel the touch of Bradamant's hand against her skin.
Think of me as a bitch who gets the job done, Bradamant said. She walked across to the door. Don't call me. I'll call you.
The door clicked shut behind her. Irene stared at the bare desk in front of her, sprawled like a doll in the chair. She couldn't turn her head, and she didn't have the muscular focus to scream. She tasted bitterness and despair. Perhaps she had been wrong to bind Bradamant by an oath in the language, she thought through the confusion. Perhaps this betrayal ultimately came down to her own insults to Bradamant's integrity. Or then again, perhaps Bradamant was a backstabbing bitch. A nagging twitch of guilt lurked at the back of her mind. Yes, she had to admit it. She had enjoyed working with Vale. It wasn't just a case of her great detective fixation. She'd always loved the Holmes stories, and the Watson stories, and even the Moriarty stories. But there was more to Vale than just being a great detective. There was the prickly man who'd confessed to his split with his family, but who was still ready to help them when they asked. There was his surprising generosity and courtesy. There was even the humanizing touch that had lent Kai his dressing gown, and she'd found them sitting over breakfast discussing airships. She wasn't a child looking for a role. She was a librarian with a job to do, and sharing information with Vale and Sing had resulted in things getting done. Letting herself be immobilized by guilt would be as poisonous as Bradamant's curare, and as harmful. There was something deeper to this, though. As she struggled to stay alert, as her mind fought not to follow her body into lassitude, she tried to think it through. She had nothing better to do, after all. Librarians didn't betray other librarians like this. Bradamant had been playing the part thoroughly, but just once or twice she'd seen that Bradamant had been afraid. She'd taken up someone else's mission, something which was, if not actively forbidden, at least a serious breach of convention. She'd already tried and failed once to get the book. Now she'd assaulted Irene and left her in danger in order to reach the book first. Who could have pushed her that far? Irene felt chilled. Some of the older librarians had unsavory reputations. A lifetime among books didn't cultivate depravity or debauchery as much as a love of mind games and politics, and those games could turn dark. Even Capalia could have her own objectives. Look at Kai, for instance. He'd been planted on Irene in the middle of a mission involving Alberic. What precisely was going on there? How many people had guessed the truth about him? Her mind felt as if it was stuffed with marshmallows, clogged at the edges and fuzzy in the middle. It must be the drug. But she had to think. She had to work this out. She had the facts. She just needed to apply them. Compared with Capalia, there were people like Carchet, Bradamant's patron. He was reclusive and exacting. Nobody dared argue with his messengers when he requested a specific book. Rumour had it that he had a great deal of influence among the older librarians, when he cared to use it. The fact that he'd chosen Bradamant as a protégé was interesting in itself. The fact that she would assault other librarians and steal their work in order to avoid disappointing him was even more so. Irene was abruptly filled with a burning desire to read the damned elusive book, if it was so very important. She was aware that this sort of logic had landed people in trouble before. Screw logic. She was furious. Was that her finger twitching? Please let it be her finger twitching. She tried to cough. Something resembling coherent noise came out. She was so going to have Bradamant's arse for this, metaphorically speaking. The door handle rattled. She could hear the murmur of voices outside, but nothing distinct. She struggled to call out intelligibly, but only a ragged gurgle emerged. In desperation, she jerked her leg, kicking out at the desk.
There was a thud as her shoe banged into the hollow side. Another brief exchange of conversation. A pause. The door swung open with a bang. Out of the corner of her eye, she could see Vale and Kai standing there, Vale refolding something about the size of a wallet and sliding it into his pocket. Both of them looked